Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Where is the shepherd when you're in the darkness?
The late Dr. Steve Farrar on Focus on the Family Minute, sharing how to trust God even when it's hard.
Now, I know he's everywhere. I know he's omnipresent. But in the purposes of this context, where is he? Is he behind you? No. Is he to the side of you? No. He's in front of you, leading you. You see, verse 4 tells us that he'll protect me. That's what that's all about. He'll walk me through the valley of deepest darkness. Some of you desperately needed to hear that this morning, because it's never been this deep. It's never been this dark. And your hope is starting to flicker. Listen, you just hold on to the shepherd and watch him work. There's no dark to him. He knows precisely what he's doing.
More from Steve at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles. Eric's Painting, your North County licensed residential and commercial paint company. You will love the expert attention to detail when working with Eric. He specializes in refinishing cabinets, stained or painted, and stained decks and porches. Great reviews on Yelp, and he guarantees quality work. Call Eric or find him on Facebook here in the North County. 805-975-6960.
Hey, this is Linda from Steve Schmidt Topsoil. We've been your family-owned and operated neighborhood landscape materials yard for over 40 years, and we invite you to come let us help you with your do-it-yourself landscape projects. Our friendly staff is ready to assist you with design ideas to create the yard of your dreams. Come see us at Steve Schmidt Topsoil. Look for the circus wagon off the 101 on Ramada in Paso Robles.
Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers welcomes Heather Bordan to its team of commercial property casualty professionals. With more than 20 years of experience, Heather can design insurance solutions that protect your business. Whether you're a contractor, winery owner, farmer, rancher, or manufacturer, Heather is the right person to survey your needs and develop innovative solutions to protect your most important asset. Contact Heather today, 805-540-3900, or Heather at AdlerBelmontGroup.com.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
Now, the rest of the story. Bob McLaughlin was a New York cop. 1976, he was assigned to a precinct in Queens. July 3, he was on late tour, that's midnight to 8 a.m., and it was raining. 3:55, Bob and his partner got a call, Jamaica section of Queens, a maternity. Arriving at the address, the officers found a very pregnant lady. She said she was in labor, said the baby would be born any minute. "Is it your first, ma'am?" "No," she said, "this would be her sixth." So Mrs. Croom knew what she was talking about. There were no ambulances available. There was no time to wait for one. "Come with us, ma'am." And Officer Bob helped Mrs. Croom into the back seat of the squad car. His partner would drive. The rain is coming down in torrents now. The squad car pulled away from the curb. Mrs. Croom cried out. It was time. In fact, a half mile down the street, time ran out. Officer Bob told his partner to pull over. He, Bob, would attempt to deliver the baby himself. He had been trained for it in police academy. He had heard the lecture. He had seen the film. He had even assisted an ambulance attendant in delivering a baby some years previous. Although on that occasion, Bob mostly just stood by, but this time, for the first time, it was all up to him. The imminently expectant mother, helped by staying fairly calm, Bob stayed as calm as he could, played it by the book. Nobody recalls exactly how long it took. And yet then and there, in the rain, in the pre-dawn dark, on a lonely street in Queens, a child was born. Oh, there were no complications. Mother and baby did fine. The squad car proceeded to Queens General Hospital. There they were joined shortly by the ecstatic father. Beaming and breathless, Mr. Croom wanted to know which officer had delivered his new son. And Bob grinned. Mr. Croom pumped his hand, said he'd like to name his boy after the policeman. But he was disappointed to hear that the policeman's name was Robert. He already had another son named Robert. Well, I'll tell you what, said the officer. Our beat is Sector A. On the radio, we call it Adam. And thus was the child, born July 3, 1967, on the way to Queens General, named Adam Croom. It was indeed a special delivery. How very special is the rest of the story. You see, policeman Robert McLaughlin's now a lieutenant, operates the field training unit in Brooklyn's 90th Precinct, and he was present this January, this year, for the graduation of 40 new police recruits. And he was reading the names of the new recruits, which by sheerest happenstance had been assigned to his district. Lieutenant McLaughlin startled himself when he came to the name Adam Croom. Yes, sir, Adam Croom said, since I was in the third grade, when my mother told me about you, I have wanted to be a policeman. With a handshake, which became a fatherly hug, Lieutenant Bob McLaughlin welcomed to the police force the baby boy he had welcomed into the world in the back seat of a squad car 21 years ago. And now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley. I'm the host of Sound Off on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons and an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. Today, from Odessa, Ukraine, we are speaking with Captain Nick Demduk. He is a captain in the Ukraine National Guard. And I was asking him a question. Nick, let me bring a caller in real quick and we'll get back to the momentum. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask our guests today?
I don't want to ask him anything, but just some trivia. There's a local Ukrainian plastic surgeon in Templeton that volunteers to go to Ukraine every year.
What's his name?
Dr. Verkachevsky.
And so he does go and do surgeries in Ukraine and plastic help where surgery. He's from.
Yes.
That's very nice.
Interesting.
Yes.
That's all I have to offer.
Thank you. And, Nick, let's get back to the momentum story. You were starting to talk, and we had to quickly go to a break, and I had asked you about, it seemed in the beginning the momentum was primarily Ukraine. Then it appeared that it was Russia was taking small gains, and they're saying that Ukraine is starting to gain momentum.
Well, what I was saying is that the Russian military results were pretty much mediocre. Yes, they managed to capture some small-scale cities, but overall they got stuck. And so basically, if we put it bluntly, the situation is some kind of a dead end now. So right now it's more, this war itself is more likely a war on exhaustion, whoever exhausts first. But right now, we can say there is some kind of parity with between Russia and Ukraine. So in this case, Russia attacks like civil infrastructure and Ukraine. Well, Ukraine, if we qualify the oil refinement stations in Russia as the civil the civil infrastructure, yeah, but and no at the same time, because in Russia, the oil and oil product exports is a key factor of gaining additional income to finance the war. So therefore, these and of course the military supplies. So these attacks are really do have some results. Also, there were some very resultive strikes on entire stations in the Crimean Peninsula and within the Russian territory after the U.S. government has authorized the opportunity to have strikes on within the Russian territory with the American equipment. So the TACAMS missiles were very successful in hitting those targets. So right now we can see there's some kind of parity and not really clear for now what will happen next.
And when you talk about parity, Russia obviously has more money and more people and a larger army. But for a very long time, America did not want you to use American weapons to attack any Russian territories, while the rest of the most of the rest of the allies said, go ahead. So this has made a big difference then. The death rates, those killed in action, why Russia says that many more Ukrainians have died, more the European media believes it's more Russians have died. What are they saying in Ukraine?
Well, I would say if you want to have to see some kind of trends in ratio, you can always refer to the Oryx resource and Andrew Perpetua. I guess he's one of the biggest experts in analyzing and counting losses. I mean, like verified losses, mostly not losses of the manpower, but mostly of the equipment, but and vehicles. But still, you can still have some appreciation of that. I can literally say that the figures on Russian losses are pretty much comparable with what the Ukrainian government says and what the British intelligence say about the losses. So I would say that the range of figures is actually pretty close to the real life. Well, I mean, pretty close to the reality. I would say the Ukrainian, I don't know the exact figure, and I guess it's never disclosed to the public, but I guess the Ukrainian losses in manpower are, I guess they are approximately 3 to 4 times less than Russian. So I would say that more than 100,000 Ukrainian men and women in the army have already died during these 2 years. I guess this figure is pretty realistic, and I mean pretty close to reality, but no one knows the real figures, so that's the point.
So substantially more than have died in Russia.
I mean the Russian losses of several hundred thousand are pretty realistic, I would say, and Ukrainian are around 100,000 men and women.
And I think it's tougher when you're going to another country and trying to attack in another country. They're not on their home ground.
I would say there are many more factors to that. So why the loss rate is actually high? I would say that at some point the loss rate for Russians was like many times higher than 1 to 3. So sometimes they, especially during the heavy assault operations, especially like let's say Bakhmut during 2023, it was really a bloody mess over there. So Ukraine defended the positions, and of course the defense requires like sustained less manpower losses rather than the assault, and accordingly, Ukrainian losses during the aborted counteroffensive during 2023, like summer 2023, were also a bit higher than the Russian defenders. But overall, I would like to say that the still the ratio is pretty much like this, and it doesn't really change. So, so we can discuss a lot about why it happens, but I think it's a bit of off topic today, and I'm not a big expert on that as well. So, why Russian military failed so much while having pretty much more of everything, of every resources, the equipment, the manpower, etc., etc. But that's how it is.
And do you personally, for yourself, do you have friends and family that have perished in this war?
I will say that, like, not like close friends or colleagues, but yes, I do know some people who died during this war, so, yeah. But they're not, like, my very close acquaintance, so it's not, I'm not in constant contact with them, so I just learned that they died during the war, so. Yeah, so it happens. I would rather say that it's really a unique sight to behold that Ukraine has much less resources on everything, but still maintains the as much as possible and literally doing it on the nerve, because having less ammunition, less equipment, less manpower, less of everything, but still they are defending their country, and therefore they are doing literally their best, because you know it's the psychological and moral factor is also a factor, so it also helps, and I would say that this is something that I guess the historians of the future will study very, very closely, regardless of how this war ends. So that's something to consider.
And you said it's a war of exhaustion. Are there a number of people that you know, and how do you feel? Are you becoming quite exhausted with this this war going on in your country?
I mean, morally exhausted, yes. But what I meant is the exhaustion of the resources, so resources of all kinds. So yeah. So that's the like an endurance run war. So whoever fails first. So that's why Ukraine has to pose enough resistance for Russia to do something, to find some ways and means to at least have some kind of not necessarily a peace deal of any kind, but rather stopping the slaughter. In any way or another. But as far as we can see, well, regardless of what Putin says, they are not really planning to do that, at least not in the nearest future. So that's what they're going to do. But this won't change the situation much, because the war is at the dead end right now, and Ukraine needs enough resources to stand, and Russia even has enough resources, but they cannot put it correctly, thankfully. Yeah, but that's what I say. So whoever runs out of the resources, out of manpower, out of whatever, because actually, you know, we shouldn't overestimate the Russian manpower, because in reality, that's even though the Russian.
We have Russian about 5 seconds. We've got to take another break. A word from our sponsors, sure. And we'll be back with more with Nick.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report. Stocks ending higher as investors digested a string of fresh economic data while awaiting the release of the Fed's closely watched inflation report for May. Tech stocks were mixed, however, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft notched all-time highs. Chipmaker and AI darling NVIDIA losing steam with its shares falling 2%. Its stock has fallen of late. Shares of Walgreens Boots Alliance tumbling 23% after the struggling pharmacy chain reported weak financial results, cut its outlook, and outlined a strategic shift that could lead to the closure of thousands of its U.S. pharmacies. The Dow winners, Amazon, Salesforce, and Boeing. The Dow decliners, Goldman Sachs, Merck, and Visa. The Dow up 36 points, the NASDAQ higher by 54, S&P 500 up 5. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Introducing Coin. That's COIGN.com. Coin is America's first credit card built by and for conservatives. Backed by Visa, Coin supports causes you care about every time you spend right at no cost to you and earn 1% cash back rewards on every purchase. Sign up today at COIGN.com. Select radio in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Terms apply. Go to coin.com/disclosures for full details.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
The debate is on. We're having a Trump versus Biden debate watch party Thursday, June 27th from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Republican headquarters in Atascadero. There is no mystery here. Both presidents have served their terms and voters have plenty to compare in each administration. This debate will be a key event offering insights into the candidates' positions and the vision for the future of America. It's going to be the place to be for Slo County conservatives. Peace and refreshments for $20 donation, paid for by the Republican Party of San Luis Obispo County.
Marv Station, formerly Clem's, 6700 El Camino Real in Atascadero, is under new local ownership, and it's better than ever. Clean, fresh look, a mini-mart that's second to none with the friendliest staff around, clean restrooms, and at Marv's, you'll find the most competitive gas prices, and they accept CFN and Pack Pride. Find out for yourself. Marv's, they've got it all. 6700 El Camino Real, Atascadero.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely. I'm the host of Sound Off on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. And today I have Nick Dimduk from Ukraine. He's actually in Odessa, Ukraine. He is a captain in the National Guard. And we're talking to him about his views on the war. He's not a military expert. He is a lifelong resident of Ukraine. And to getting an inside view of what is happening in Ukraine and in that part of the world. You can call in 238-5775 if you would like to ask a question. Nick, what do you... There's a lot of blustering going on, as you know. First of all, Russia was threatening with nuclear weapons, and now you have North Korea saying if the U.S. continues to help, they will send bombs to, start World War III. How do you respond to the threats?
Well, I'll start from the final statement. Well, from what I've learned today, I've read some analysis of the articles of and some media reports about the North Korean involvement in this war. So far, it's more like speculation and nothing in particular. So I wouldn't say it's a big threat for now. But I would like to admit that there are literally many, maybe hundreds, maybe even thousands of foreign mercenaries over there, and they are. Even not all of them are actually mercenaries, because many of those people who came, there was worse situation, were many people from India, from Nepal, from Cuba, who were lured into this war by deception. So they were lied to about what they were about to do, and some of them even didn't even know that they were they had been head into the war. So that I would say that that is some kind of issue, and there are I would say that the level of foreign involvement within Ukraine, because here in Ukraine we do have some voluntary detachments which consist of foreigners, and some foreign citizens are fighting there for Ukraine, but they are fighting legally, so they are they have all the legality to take part in this war, and I know that some Americans are also participating, but I would say that the figures are really, really different, but especially now there are not so many foreign volunteers fighting here in Ukraine rather than comparing to Russia, because in Russia it's really people from Africa, people from Latin America, people from Asia. So, and many of them came there not really like for money, for wanting to be a mercenary. Some of them were really deceived about all the situation, about what they were going to do. So sometimes they were just hired by Russia for a labor migrant, but in reality they ended up there. So that's the way it is. But and about the nuclear threat, you know, Putin deployed the nuclear threat from day three of this full-scale invasion. Yeah, because you know because in reality the war started like 10 years ago, not 2 years ago. I mean, 3 years ago the full-scale invasion started. But as far as I remember, on day three you already said something about nuclear war, because actually nuclear weapons is the only real argument that he has. But it's all about speculation, what to do and what to say. But in reality, it's more like, at least at this point, still more like blackmailing the the Western countries or whatever. So the countries who help Ukraine to stay away from this help and seize any help. But that's what they do. So I would say that of course this threat must be monitored and taken for granted. But something that you just have to be ready just in case. As far as I know, the NATO General Secretary said that they are going to modify the members' nuclear forces to be able to defend the European countries, the NATO countries, and put the resistance to Russian nuclear threats. But so in reality, as we can tell, despite what Putin says about the Western countries wanting war on Russia, in reality, there is not even enough nuclear arms in Europe to tackle the Russian threat, because Russia has both tactical and strategic nuclear weapons just very close to the Europeans. For example, the nuclear forces Russia has deployed in Kaliningrad region and Belarus are enough to wipe out Poland only with the tactical warheads. And as far as I know, the contents of these nuclear weapons of the NATO states, which are deployed in Europe, I mean like the American and etc., they are not even neutral. So it's like a free-falling nuclear bomb, something that will definitely not be, it won't be of any use in this kind of war, because the air is really controlled by the anti-air defense and the air force, so they won't have any chance to drop the nuclear bomb. But at the same time, the deployed by the members of NATO, the nuclear weapons in Europe are not that's sufficient to tackle this kind of threat. So I know that France has this kind of tactical nuclear weapon. So therefore, France will definitely participate, as we can see from what Monsieur Macron is doing. But that's pretty much it for now. So that's something that the Western countries have to be prepared for. So it will be the It would be an old school, like nuclear parity, which is somewhat unclear now.
And we're going to take a question from a commenter. What would you like to ask our guest today?
Yes, I was just going to point out to him, thanks for your bravery, Nick, for what you're doing. I'm going to point out to him, too, that some of these delays in weapons are because we're out of weapons right now. We haven't had any defense increases, and we're out of weapons. Then the Israeli war started, and we had to send a lot of our anti-missile defense to Israel, and we don't even have enough anti-missile defense for our own country right now. So what you're seeing is not necessarily a delay, even though Biden wanted to point it out as that way. He's the president of the United States, and he could have sent weapons anytime he wanted to. But what the Republicans were doing, were saying, is that, hey, we can't defend our own border, and they're sending everything over to Ukraine. But the problem with the thing with Russia is 7 times larger than Ukraine, and they have the manpower and the money. And, you know, you get somebody from the Urals or Siberia or Dagestan, and you tell them, hey, I'm going to give you $2,000 a month to go fight NATO in Ukraine. And guess what? They have plenty of people. They have plenty of money, and they have the North Koreans, Chinese, everyone who's supplying weapons to them when we can't even supply enough weapons for our own artillery rounds.
Nick? I've heard this question and commentary. I would say that everything you say is right, I guess, because I wouldn't discuss the domestic U.S. policy because I don't think that I'm not really proficient, and I think I don't have quite have the right to discuss the domestic U.S. politics. But I would say yes. So there is some kind of delay because, you know, the 30 odd years of relatively peaceful life when the U.S. had enough military potential to take part in war on terror. But this is the full scale war, and it requires the large supply of everything. And I would say that this is something that the Western countries have to figure out, because not necessarily to help Ukraine, but to be ready for some other threats, because I guess there will be some more threats within the world. So we don't know what happens in, the Middle East, yes, Middle East is an issue as well, and there can be some more places, and I'm not sure what and where, but still there's something to do and something to think about it.
The only people in NATO who I think have got any capabilities are the Poles. They have a 340,000 man army and a definite hatred for the Russians. But you look at France, they have 120,000 men. Britain has 75,000. Canada has 75,000. They didn't even spend 2.2% of their gross domestic product on their military. And so this shows the weakness of those Western countries, especially Germany and some of the other countries, Italy. That they don't want to defend themselves, and they need to defend the United States defending them, but they need to start stepping up and spend 2.2%, and they need to start spending more to defend their own European continent.
I saw a news note today that all the major NATO countries have already reached the NATO guideline of 2% of GDP for the military. So I guess the situation is somewhat improving. Well, not all countries, of course, but some countries are really small and they can't keep it up. But some like Eastern Central European countries like France, the United Kingdom, and even Germany, so they are all reaching this 2% guideline. And it may look like some kind of weakness. Well, first of all, it's not necessarily a weakness, because it just shows that the Western countries never planned any kind of war on Russia or whoever else, whatever, or regardless of what Putin said. And at that period, no one was about to accept Ukraine as a NATO member. It's also completely different from what Putin says about it, because Putin is very convinced that the word NATO was to accept Ukraine. But from that NATO, but that NATO and Ukraine saga goes for like 20 years without any real result. So the even in 2008 on that big NATO summit, Ukraine wasn't granted any kind of invitation or any kind of plan for joining in. So and even till 2014, even till 2022, there was no clear vision of Ukrainian joining NATO. And but right now we see that it's really a matter of time. The bigger problem is that how the NATO is about to face the challenges that they have, that we are having now. I mean, like not necessarily in Ukraine per se, but in Europe in general. So that because you know this kind of war, like direct warfare, is only one part, because we are not talking about the psychological operations by Russia. We're not saying about the activity of Russian intelligence, because Russian involvement in secret operations and intelligence is, I guess, it is quite something that is not really recognized yet, because the scales are really great. Because, like, even this year, I read at least 3 reports on how top secret GRU agents were disclosed, and they were captured by the authorities of countries. Like the recent one was in Slovenia, as you might have heard. So that's the point. Also, the intelligence, the psychological warfare, the Russian propaganda, which is itself it is a part of this military machine, because in Russia, the state media in Russia is not like the media that you have in the United States. Even though you may be very critical of your media, but it's still completely different from what is in Russia. And in Russia, it's just a weapon of warfare, informational warfare at this point. So we don't know how, and also we are not talking about any kind of hybrid operations of like so-called green men without any recognition patches, who just appear out from nowhere in places like Baltic states. So we don't know how NATO is ready to face these challenges.
That's the thing about Putin is people underestimate Putin. I think he's a very evil person. I've seen some of his handiwork with poisoning people that I know of. One went back to Bulgaria, and the Bulgarian said, "Oh, you'll be safe here, don't worry." And within a week, he was poisoned, because he used to be He basically turned against the Bulgarians, which made him turn against Russian. And then Putin has been killing journalists. He's been poisoning people. He's a very brilliant person. He's a very evil person, too. And I do not underestimate him, especially when it comes to intelligence and a command and control country. This man, you know, he needs to be defeated, and he's evil. But I do not underestimate that man.
No one underestimates, because I get what you are saying there, and yes, some people do underestimate Putin. But I'm not one of those people. I would say that the threat of modern Russian regime and Russian state is really under-recognized in many parts of the world, really, because you know, Russian state and Russian government, Russian state system operates like completely different. I would say that it's like the Navalny's widow, Yulia, said that it's more like a rather organized criminal organization, like a mafia gang rather than the state, because that's the way how they govern this. Of course, it may sound a bit far-fetched. So on paper, they have all the state institutions, but in reality, it operates in a completely different way. Therefore, a completely different approach is required to face Russia, to tackle Russia, and to oppose Russia. That's something that all have to consider.
And also, too, you have to remember China, too. You know, Xi now is basically a dictator, and he's just as evil as Putin is. And they're working together with the Iranians, and they have an axis of evil. And it's just, to me, people don't see the connection between the war with Israel and then the war with Russia, and then we have to send a lot of missiles defense to Israel, which we can't give to Ukraine. It's all coordinated between those people. They're an evil axis, and they're trying to basically destroy the West for their own betterment so they can increase their powers, basically.
You know, somewhat interesting, because all those countries, all this axis is really dependent on the West. So without the Western economy, there would be no Chinese economy, you know, because the
we need to take another break from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more from Nick in Ukraine.
Hi, I'm glad you could make it.
Wow, your house looks amazing.
Thanks. We just had our whole house painted by Peak Painting. They even refinished all of our cabinets.
They did a beautiful job. I really like the colors.
They had their in-house designer help me with my color selection. The whole process was so easy. You should have them do a free estimate at your house. Just go to peakpainting.com to book an appointment. That's peakpainting.com.
I'm pulling it up on my phone right now.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peakpainting.com.
Painting services come with a 9-year labor and materials warranty. Some exclusions apply. Contact peakpainting.com for details. That's Peak Painting, peekpainting.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Since 1966, Hammond Overhead Door Company has provided residential garage doors that offer more than just a strong and secure way to close your garage. They also add beauty and value to your home. Hammond Overhead Door has the right garage door to complement your home and your budget. Hammond Overhead Door Company. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Barry from Cambria says, quote, Bill's presentation was great. He displayed an admirable depth of technical understanding of the system he was presenting. It was a pleasant experience. Thank you, Barry, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing 47 years of admirable displays of technical understanding. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners, it's time to schedule your solar panel cleaning. Spring and summer are maximum solar energy production seasons. Dirty panels can decrease production by 20% or more. Make sure your panels produce the most energy and save you the most money. Visit solarponics.com to get your solar panel cleaning quote. While you're at it, ask us about battery backup and storage. Get more out of your solar energy system. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Welcome to that new money smell of freedom. Hurry in. This is the last week to earn entries for your chance to win $50,000 in cash or $50,000 in slot replay from Chumash Casino Resort. Imagine all the possibilities. Drawings this Sunday, June 30th, 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Welcome to freedom. Must be present to win. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey. I'm the host of Sound Off on Wednesdays and Thursday afternoons. And today on the show, I have Nick Demiduk. He is a captain in the National Guard in Ukraine. He is currently on vacation in Odessa, Ukraine. And he's giving us some insight about what life is there and how things are going during the war. Nick, one of the things I wanted to ask, do you believe the sanctions by the Western world are having a major impact on Russia?
I'll respond to the question. I'd like to finish the question the commenter has asked about the access and the Chinese threat. I would say that to sum it up, you know, the whole world is watching watching the situation in Ukraine and how the Western countries are helping Ukraine or what they are doing. So I would say that if you want to at least canalize Chinese threat or perhaps even tackle it in advance, the best way is to help Ukraine withstand the Russian invasion. In this case, the People's Republic of China, they will see the possible response to the alleged Taiwan intervention. So helping Ukraine may help the United States, to stay out of any future wars, at least at this point. That's what I would say. So it will help in Ukraine. Maybe it will cost you much less in both money and human life, and so your military, like men and women in the U.S. military, to stop any other intervention, any other war in the world. But about the sanctions, yes. Well, that's an interesting point. I would say that I'd like to say that the sanctions that are already imposed in Russia on Russia are not, well, I wouldn't say they are not significant, but they are not enough. And I see there are plenty of loopholes in such areas of trading activity and economic activity. So, for example, the Russian Titan is really one of the best in the world, and the U.S. is very interested in importing it from Russia for aviation manufacturing, or maybe some about the nuclear fuel, like the uranium. So that's really, I wouldn't say it's a problem. I understand why it happened, but overall, this, I guess there can be more sanctions. I guess there can be more sanctions against the persons who are related to this regime, and actually drop so many people who are really involved in all this operation. Also, I would like to say that the problem is that, well, I mean, I do understand the logic that all the sanctions are imposed on a very specific person, but in reality, they often just re-register their business and their business activity on their family members, on their friends, on their colleagues who are completely out of any sanctions. But they they operate on behalf of this sanctioned person. So that's something that you have to research much, much more. I mean, like, not necessarily you, but I mean the U.S. government and other governments, European governments, they have to research it much closer, because it's very common practice for Russia. And of course, these people are out of any sanctions; they can freely travel the world. They can go to any countries, to any Western countries they want, and do whatever they want. So in reality, Russia still gets all the necessary components and ingredients from the Western countries. I mean, not only Western countries, but from, let's say, Taiwan and from other countries. They re-imported from the third countries and intermediary countries. But you get my point. So we need more sanctions on that matter. Again, I get more sanctions against the countries who help Moscow to avoid any kind of sanctions.
And there is more and more talk about more sanctions against the oligarchs in Russia. There's also a lot of Russian men of fighting age that moved. As you know, when Josh was over in Istanbul, he said that there were a ton of Russian men coming there to avoid the war. There is some news articles saying that it's going to take them 100 years to recover from this, because of the amount of men that have left and men who have died. Do you agree with those statements that it could take Russia a very long time to bounce back?
You know, I think that it is somewhat true, especially if we think about the demographic gap with the, in Russia. I mean, you know, this these problems are common for Ukraine as well, but for the obvious reasons. But speaking about Russia, yes, Russia will definitely require more time to recover from these losses, and it's really quite interesting how they are going to do that. In terms of people fleeing the war, yes, I guess in that case, it's perhaps the only way to avoid, I mean, to remain human and not participate in something that has no sense. And I would say that this war has literally no sense.
And it isn't... Is it accurate that many Ukrainians have friends and family in Russia, and Russians have friends and family in Ukraine, and this has been very tough for those reasons also?
Yeah, there was actually a documentary in by a Russian opposition journalist in a year ago or so, where he discovered this and explored this topic on how the war influenced the relations between relatives in the Russian Federation and in Ukraine. And yeah, so the results are pretty obvious. People are really splitting and separating, and we also don't know what to do with that.
How could Ukraine get ahead? How could they win this war? If you could have it, what do you think the best way for this war to end soon with Ukraine winning would be?
That's a very complicated question. You know, I don't want to sound very entitled or to be very preachy on that. So that's just a small disclaimer. But what I think is that the best way is to, of course, help Ukraine stand against it, so to supply Ukraine with everything Ukraine needs, I mean, in terms of ammunition, equipment, vehicles, whatever. And, of course, the that's number one. Number two is diplomatic support. But as far as we can see, that this support is prevalent. So the bigger problem is the support from the so-called global south, but that's the other topic. And, number three, I guess the only way to stop this war, at least at some point, or help Ukraine withstand and to switch to the political process of reintegrating the occupied territories, is, of course, provide the security guarantees for Ukraine. I mean, for that part, which is not occupied by Moscow. So that's something that the Western countries have to take risk of and give Ukraine some kind of security guarantees for the future. So in this case, the war may finish much, much earlier. In any other case, it may be some kind of the freezing the conflict with any unpredictable consequences, because the war will definitely not stop.
So there is a possibility this just goes on for years and years and years.
Well, from this year's perspective, it may look like this, but like I say, there can be some measures to apply to help the situation, to help this help Ukraine to stop this war at least at some point. So I actually named them before.
And I think many people throughout the world would really like to see not only this war end, but the war between Israel and Gaza. And one thing I know several people in the military in this country, and they have a little stronger view on the importance of both Ukraine and Israel succeeding. Nick, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. You actually came through very clear, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's been an honor to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This hour of Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL and 99.3 FM was brought to you by Farm Supply, serving your fencing, irrigation, and livestock needs since 1950. Farm Supply, for the farmer in you.
AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.